Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I really, really thank you for joining us today. It's a great show. I'm really looking forward to this show. One of my absolute favorite sister energies is going to be on today. And you know how you meet those people or you talk to those people and you immediately feel a soul-level connection? Well, Annie Burnside is the author of Soul to Soul Parenting. And from the moment I picked up her book and started reading it, and then started to converse with her, and I did a show with her last year, I absolutely love this woman. She's full of wisdom. She's beautiful inside and out. And she's going to talk to us, a mother of three, about how we can really connect on an intimate level with our children through all the little touch points, as Dr. Brazelton would call them, that we go through in life. And the real, you know, gut core emotions that come out with unexpected events, tragedy, grief, and also all those wonderful other little aspects where puberty and the sex talk and all those things come in. So without further ado, let me introduce my dear sister, author, Soul to Soul Parenting, Annie Burnside. Annie, thank you so much for being on Unlimited Realities today.
Oh, thank you, dear Lisa, and right back at you, sister. You know, I concur with everything you just said, and what a joy kinship is, isn't it?
And it really is. And you know, the one thing, when I read your book, and, you know, I had you on last year in 2010, and as soon as I picked up your book, and it was one of those books that I devoured in a Saturday afternoon, and it was, you spoke to my soul. You spoke like me. You thought like me. You felt like me. I felt the resonance before I ever spoke to you personally. And what wisdom in such practicality you offered in this book is so not only awakening for a parent, but also really gets you in touch with your own values and that, hey, you know what? I'm not doing so bad. So, you know, there's so many things. I want to touch on a few things today, and we can take it, you know, how I flow. I don't have any standard, real precise
level of questions.
That's why I love
you, Lisa. We go with the flow. Yeah.
We flow, honey. So,
that's my kind of show.
Two things I want to hit on is, since we spoke last year, I've gone through some touch points with my own children. And one of them, which I am finding among other parents, is really a necessary area to address, and it's the sex talk. My son's 15 now, and when he was 14, I really had hoped and thought that my ex-husband would take the reins and take control over that conversation, and he didn't. And so I thought, you know what, I'm not going to leave this up to chance. This needs to be addressed. So for 2.5 hours, we sat on the couch and had this long, in-depth, sans the gory details, you know, talk about sex. And at the end of it, he looks at me and he says, "Mom, you handled that really well. I could never expect Dad to handle it that well."
Wow. Unbelievable. What an aware boy.
You know, and these are the things we're all going through. It's real. It's raw. It's gritty. And life is like that. And there's, you know, there's all these little aspects. So let's get into soul-to-soul parenting. Now, what inspired you to write this book? I know you're a mother, a wonderful mother of three.
Oh, thank you. Mother
children,
of three,
and you're welcome.
14, 13, and 10. But, you know, really, just to use your example of the sex talk, it was just this strong feeling in me how I like to be treated and view the world. Truth, honesty. I think our kids are ready for so much more. Oh, I feel it pulsating behind their eyes these days. They yearn for depth. They yearn to remember outwardly, consciously, who they really are. And what you did with the sex talk is soul-to-soul parenting at its finest. No hidden agendas. Say what you mean. Say what you feel. You know, you can use appropriate language, of course, digestible bites, perhaps, if they're younger. But, you know, my kids are 14, like I said, 13 and 10 now. My two oldest are girls. And we go there. I mean, yes, I'm the parent, and this is not an open home, but it's very open as far as sharing. And there are no limits. And I model that. And we do it with humor. And we do it with joy and depth all at the same time. Like, this is it, girls. We're going to sit down and we are going to have a chat. Okay,
yes.
I see the eye roll. Mm-mm, sister. No, no. It's time. We're going to talk about sex and we're going to do it today. You know, so it's not all about being all serious. It's kind of how you do it. And, of course, you know, we've been working on this, the groundwork, laying it since they were 8, 7, and 4 officially. So the soul language is fairly available in our home. But even if it isn't, I want to say to people, this is not about speaking any one language. I think you and I, Lisa, happen to love the metaphysical. But this is open to all. This is about being truly yourself and comfortable within your own skin and modeling that for your children, no matter what your belief system, no matter what your language.
Yes.
Can we rise for our children? I mean, the hunger that I feel out there and the depression and the anger, even in, you know, in affluent communities and poor communities, the missing piece to me is then this type of openness about who they really are.
Yes, yes. And it's and when they're being modeled, they're watching, you know, their parents, and their parents are modeling authenticity and really speaking and walking their truth, then it can only transfer back to them. It is a trickle-down effect. They do become what we're projecting, you know?
Right, a clear mirror. And that includes, I know you and I have talked. I mean, I've had, it's an ongoing process. So I, as the parent, am continually going through a new challenge, uncovering more in my interior. I've just been working through a herniated disc for 8 months.
Oh, no.
It's been challenging, but I tell you what, right along with that has come so much interior delight and uncovering with the physical pain. That's really, and I model that for my children. Well, this is what I journaled about today. This is what I uncovered in Annie. We talk about it at dinner. What can you uncover? You know, and we oppose, so it's not anymore about, it's just my work. The self-exploration is modeled and invited in the whole family. So if I go to visit a channel about, or a medical intuitive, you better believe I share with the family aspects that was uncovered for me to look at more closely. They know what I'm journaling about. They know kind of the, you know, not every detail. But, you know, if you're going to trust your vibes, then share with your kids, boy, I had to trust my vibes on that baby. You know, that's what I'm talking about here, that type of level of depth in your family.
That's right. And you know, it doesn't come down to what you are raised or what your religious beliefs are, because this is just real, raw, and gritty truth. And, you know, where you are coming from, I mean, your book should be, you know, one of those standard guidebooks that's given out in the delivery room. So, you know, when the baby's born. So it's one of those books that really, it taps into every aspect of really being true and coming from your heart and being authentic and being genuine. And you want to raise these little beings into being whole people that they can be self-sufficient and independent and honorable and compassionate and sensitive souls that, you know, when they go out into the world, they've got a clue. And they're not just this rudderless ship jumping off of society's, you know, whims of the moment. So,
they're very aware of their internal compass. They're comfortable within their own skin. When my children turn 25, I feel like no matter which college they attended or what they choose to do, if they have that, then, oh boy, I really feel that I will have done my job as a parent. And, I feel that's kind of the missing piece that we dance around. Like, we keep wanting to solve so many issues with our children or issues of the day on a certain level. And it really feels to me, this is my perspective, like we just continue to put a Band-Aid on. Like, what has shifted for me and for my children is that without a doubt, no matter what they're going through, even if it's difficult, there is now a connection to a larger perspective, which is that they are, in their own right, eternal, infinite, multidimensional beings.
Amen.
That are a part of the oneness. So that, we always, always have that. We feel it. I mean, my moments of nirvana, which my children have witnessed, where my entire body is pulsating, literally, it's tingling all over, tears streaming down my face, rendered speechless. Such moments of intense oneness and joy, it comes because I'm connected to that larger perspective within myself and how I view others soul to soul. So that, I think, you know, we're going to have to eventually go to this larger perspective if we truly desire the peace that we all say we want.
Yes. It's the dirty
and in
work.
Every
you
aspect
know, it's
of,
digging deep.
Yeah. It really, really is. So, you know, it's kind of like there's an understanding. I teach a workshop with women, a soul-to-soul circle. We meet every Friday. Love it. And, you know, us sitting there, I had debilitating issues and everything that's uncovering. I had someone who had just lost a mother. I had someone going through a very ugly divorce, someone unsure of a career path, feeling very, very lost. And you know what? If you really can look at that as, so this is what it feels like to go through this human experience. All these human experiences are universal, you know, and you can detach a little bit in the understanding of that. I am a spirit going through this human, universal human experience. This is what it feels like. You know, does that make sense?
Right.
It kind of opens a space to breathe within your life situation. You feel the life underneath your life situation.
Oh, that's a really
me.
Yeah, that's a deep perspective, Annie. That's really well put. And in that vein, I would like to kind of transcend into another segue here of a topic. And one of the, you know, there's something that has happened in my, among my, one of my clients, and it really brought me back to a time in my own life, and it seems to be coming up again, and I would just like to touch on it a little bit, because it has been weighing heavy on my heart for the last week. But I had a client who passed on and left their grieving spouse and children. And when my daughters, I have four children, and my daughters are now on their own, but they're 23 and 21 now. Yes, I was very young when I had them. At 4 and 6, they actually lost their biological father. And the transitions that went through for all of us at that point was very, very, very difficult, because he was diagnosed with lung cancer on October 18th and died the end of January. So it was a very fast transition. And I had just moved in with my ex-husband at this point in my life, but at that time I had just moved in with Mark, and we were starting to form this little family with my daughters. And he had never had children before. And at that point, we were struggling and fighting because, and this is something I want all of you guys to pay attention to when you have another significant other in your life, because these are the little warning signs we get, and if we ignore them, they will show up again. Mm-hmm. We would argue about the fact of how he obviously was insecure, but he would not let them, or we fought over this, have a picture of their father on their dresser, because he was now taking over that role as father, and they just needed to get over it. And dear God, I should have packed my stuff. Had I known then what I know now, I should have packed my stuff and gotten my own place and just looked at that as wow. Wow,
yeah.
Is that a telling feature, okay? So needless to say, it's taken... My daughters are well-adjusted now, and we've talked about it, but I do have a lot of remorse that I still go into in regard to that situation. But how can we offer people who are going through that situation? Because it just seems like I had this client a few months ago. I had another client who left a family. I mean, it's just, it's heartbreaking. It absolutely rocks me to my core. And
going into
the
divorce or the death part of it, or both?
Oh, no, the death part of it, divorce. That's over and done with, you know. That was necessary. No, it's the grief part. It's the grief for the children, because you've got a grieving spouse, and then you've got the children aspect. And in being a soul-to-soul parent, sometimes that parent can't, you know, pull themselves up enough to do or help or assist. And is there some kind of a tool that we can offer them, like a journaling or, you know, addressing grief, or, you know, besides
Yes. I mean, any of the tools in the book would be great. I mean, whatever their natural gateways are, helping them to identify those, because that becomes their toolbox. Like for me, it's music, it's dancing, it's my bike. It's, you know, for some people it might be baking, it might be Reiki, whatever it is, to really, they know that they have that to rely on to help them open the connection. But, you know, I have to say, and, you know, death for me, and believe me, we all grieve. I mean, grief is very, very, very real in a human suit. But I've done a lot of work in some channeling classes and different things here in Chicago. I had a beautiful channeling teacher named Cheryl Noday, and after I went through much of that type of work, I mean, it is amazing. The veil is so thin. I mean, I will be driving my kids to carpool, drop them off at travel soccer practice, and this has happened several times. In the car, I'll think of someone that I love who's passed over. Whew, energy is right there, and the most
isn't it? I can feel it too.
The most beautiful, just eternal connection is felt. I had a woman at my workshop who said, "How do you begin that?" And I say to people, what has really worked for me is you begin to ask. You know, have you, her, both of her parents have died, and I put it this way, this is how I would say it, you know, I've learned to dialogue with my body, with spirit, and I'm teaching my children that, to really wake up those connections that are available to all. But I say, you know, may perhaps start like this, dear mother who gave me birth, I am letting you know right now that I am absolutely available, I am ready, I am willing, I invite you to commune with me so that I may feel you in a physical way. I am completely open to a continuing felt connection that will help me on earth with my self-realization. And these are the types of, you know, you do it in your head, you do it out loud, but I model this for my clients, for my children, and boy, it's us taking accountability for being an eternal, infinite being and what that means. So I would say as that possibility opens up, grief and loss does not have to be held onto for as long. Because, quite frankly, I've found when the person, the individual, when the energy is out of a physical body, with the human suit as a block, with the physical masks that possibly were never looked at and taken off, the ability for true intimacy on a soul level actually is heightened. And that is very, very exciting. You know, so if that can help anyone, and I am not saying it's easy, believe me, I've been on this path for over 20 years, I'll be on it forever, but that's where I am, and that's where I hope to be taking my children. And I do it through my intuitive journal. I speak to myself in that way. I speak to spirit in that way. I'd say that's been one of my greatest things. I sit with that. If I'm angry at someone out there, I know if I'm plugged in, it's something that I need to look at within myself. And I make it a priority to go home and work through that, to navigate that, versus just leave it to chance, as you mentioned earlier. I don't leave much to chance. I go with the flow.
Right.
But I'm very accountable for what I'm putting out there and taking in, period.
Well, because it's such an exchange anyway. So whatever you do put out there, it always comes back in maybe a different face, a different form, a different mask, but it definitely does. You know, energy is constant. And that's why it is so important to address and be present, because these things change in the blink of an eye. I mean, you see how society likes to take something and run with it, and there's no real moral compass or value in the agenda. So, you know, as parents, it's so important that we maintain that openness and that unconditionalism and that connectedness, both with the children but with spirit. And
yes.
And to give them their spirit and let them recognize their wholeness and who they are. Because these little beings are going to be incredible human being adults. And, you know, it's up to us, you know, if we don't raise them, who's going to raise them, you know?
And the death thing, I'm so glad you brought that up, because, boy, like the sex thing, we shy away from it. But if you really if you look at it straight on, and you know, I can share, I 4 years ago I had a tremendous loss of someone my age whom I was very close to, and you know, I held on to it. I learned the hard way. I held on to it so much so that my body suffered greatly. And later, as I dialogued, had future dialogues, there was no need for it. He was absolutely, perfectly soaring and so very connected to all whom he loved on this plane. And the message always comes through that do not suffer on my account. You know, I'm here. You're connected to me. Live your life to the fullest is the greatest gift that you could give me to yourself, to the world at large. And once I really got that and experienced many mystical experiences with the energy, it in my heart, I knew that I would not hold on to grief and loss any longer than it took just the initial sadness of it, you know, if that makes sense. And I hope to help anyone through that who needs that, including my own children, because they will face grief and loss. It's 100% guaranteed that we will all physically die, you know, and I think the more that we're open about that and accept it, then the easier it will be for all of us to truly live.
Right. And there's also that piece that, you know, a lot of times adults aren't really tapped into what they're feeling, or the feelings become so overwhelming that they want to shove them, or they want to escape from them, or they don't, you know, it's gritty. And so if an adult, you know, is struggling with their own grief and, you know, there's a limited amount of reserve they have to provide, you know, that compass or that support. And so, you know, it's that grief together that they share. And so if there's that heavy grief, then it's kind of like, okay, let's embrace this really heavy grief. Let's just honor the fact that we just need to cry right now, and we need to, like, cry and let it through and feel it. And it's not about, you know, putting a Band-Aid on it. It's about really uncovering the depth of love that creates that emotional
loss. Yes.
Love.
Yeah. And again, just like the sex talk, I believe that I, in that situation, and when I have grieved, say openly to my children, I mean, they see it because I don't hide it. And I think that's very healthy for them. And it's a continue open, you know, I am feeling tremendous grief today, but I want you to know you are safe. You are loved. We are always connected, both physically, and you're not with me, energetically, and hopefully we've, you know, taught them what that means. And I'm sorry if the home at this point is not exactly as we desire it to be, but I must move through this grief. And if you have to say that every day, but let them know that you're grieving out loud and that you will move through it and that you are seeking in an inner way and an outer way to heal, but that you need time to heal. And, you know, I'm sorry, my beloveds, that you will have to see me heal. But that is what's going to be occurring here, and I'm going to be helping and seeing and witnessing you heal, and we're going to do it together. Cry your beautiful eyes out. You know, that's what I really, like, people worry about tantrums, and I say, let the kid go up in their room, you know, if they're having a tantrum. Get it out of their vibration, baby. Let it out. Don't hold on to it, else they're going to be looking at it at age 40-something as a dis-ease in their body, as we all know. You know, we've all had to face things like that. So
that's,
I hope,
really
that
incredible. Yeah, because it's one of those things that when there's any kind of, you know, loss, it's, you know, there's the five stages of grief, and there's, you know, first there's that denial and the shock and the bargaining and the anger and the sadness. But to get through all those stages, there's also that grief that's felt in anything that is a loss. And children inherently feel things more acutely because of their freedom, their lack of blocks, their lack of having to adjust in society, their much more pure essence of truth within their emotional body, their physical body. And so, you know, it's us as adults to really need to step up to the plate even more so and allow our truth to be heard. If we're having a rough day, then, hey, you know what? Just admit it. And don't you know, don't try and you can try and gain control. You can do whatever, you know, you feel really motivated that's best for the moment. But the truth is really important, because I think when children really see the parents honoring their truth, whether it's, you know, anger, frustration, sadness, grief, love, then they have a clearer view of themselves and their own emotional state. And
yes,
it's
absolutely.
You know, it's like we all have to be real. We all have to come from that genuine heart, that genuine soul, and speak truth. Because life isn't all about rainbows and buttercups. You know, it is.
Oh, no.
You know,
and when I first went on the spiritual path, believe me, Lisa, I wanted it to be, oh, it's just soul to soul, baby. You know, joy, the joy, the joy. And yeah, I feel joy, but boy, was it a rude awakening when I realized that the shadow psychic debris stuff had to be looked at, and it wasn't going to be pretty, and it was going to be messy. But it's the joint for me, illuminating that psychic debris that we hope our children do not have, because we're in a conscious, more environment. But I want to say another way to look at the death thing, too, and then we can move on from that. But, you know, for example, if they lose a pet, it's not even just sharing, as I shared an example of how to share, I'm grieving today, I'm crying. But, you know, speak openly about your love for that pet or an individual or, you know, my beloved children, do you know how much your father meant to me? I cry today because this is how I felt, or, you know, or, boy, that little dog brought me so much joy. I hope you realize that the 12 years that that dog was in my life and on my lap, I can still feel that dog, and I'm going to be talking, you know what I mean? So that's the type of thing that parents, I hope, begin to step up to the plate, live true, show your spirit to your children through your voice, through your actions. That is what will free our children to do the same.
And
their lives will be much different.
And honor that person or animal that did die, like honor their birthday. You know, don't allow that memory to be something that you want to push aside. That person deserves to be honored. Like, I have a girlfriend who married a man who was a widower and lost his wife from ovarian cancer, and she left behind three teenage daughters. And so my girlfriend of 20 plus years moved into the situation with a widowed man and his three teenage daughters. And I have to tell you, that woman, this friend of mine, did such an amazing job of honoring these daughters' mother. I mean, even to this day, you know, to this day, as they're all adults now and they have children of their own, she is still honoring the memory of their mother. And I went up to visit her in New England a few months ago, and I was having dinner with she and her husband, and I said, you know, Kaz, I really have to give you so much credit, because what you have done and what you've created in regard to these children, she was obviously a wonderful woman. She raised, you know, a wonderful family. And you were so secure within yourself that never once crossed your mind as a threat, that memory, their love that they have for her, never needs to be shoved away or compromised or not talked about in front of you. Not only that, but, you know, setting, honoring her at weddings, you know, and just talking about her, you know, at receptions. And I just find that openness and that kind of a heart just so genuine and so important in today's society, where, you know, it is a fast food mentality, and we do have a tendency as society of wanting to push things quicker or shove things or escapism or avoidance. And, you know, to really honor something so touching and so deep and something so life-changing, I find people like that phenomenal. And so,
it's soul-to-soul at its finest, isn't it, Lisa? You know,
she
treated those girls in a very soul-to-soul way, and they will forever be grateful. And now they go out into the world, and in whatever business they're in, they will be more soul-to-soul because of her. And there's space for and both. I mean, I think you and I are both big believers in that divine paradox. It appears to be either or. love this, like that. And that, you know, it's either, but it's even both. There was space for those girls to love both beautiful women who were playing a role of either mother or stepmother, but in their own right are eternal, divine, infinite beings. You know, and one recommendation, because I'd like to bring it on home to the practical too, create an altar of a lost loved one or a pet, but not an altar of grief, an altar of gratitude and celebration. So really, when I think of people who have passed, we do the most for them and the most for us by thinking and aligning with gratitude and celebration of who they were and who they are. You know, that is how they desire to be respectfully remembered and continually a part of the family. So that could be something to create a personal altar. I would be, that's a practical example of what you could do with it at home. Yeah.
That's wonderful. And that was really wise wisdom there coming from you, my sister. That was beautiful. Now, let's look at a little bit more, because this hour is probably my absolute quickest hour on my radio show ever.
Half an hour. Remember when we were like, man, we got a 2011 needs an hour for us.
I think we got the hour, and now we need
4 hours. This is like
hour.
A long coffee clutch. I love it. Love it, love it.
I do, too. This is great. It's easy when we're both on the same page. So it's like, you know, we're both working on the same kind of mind space here. But let's talk a little bit. You have actual themes that you open up in your book in regard to, like, communication and connectedness and boundaries. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. When I wrote the book, as I just said a minute ago, I love the esoteric and the themes, but I also really, you know, it's 2011, and it's about being your true self in your own backyard, at your kid's baseball game, at the grocery store. Very few of us are headed off to India for the mountaintop for 7 months or more of inner contemplation. Believe you me, that'd be right up my alley. But I'm a modern mother of three living outside of Chicago, so not so much in the cards. And I found, you know what, it doesn't need to be in the cards. So the themes are really meant to bridge that gap with the everyday vehicles into integrating everything that we speak of here today into everyday reality. You know, for example, serendipity, synchronicity, you know, the theme of connectedness, the energy connection could be taught through music. Lita Wise, an American Idol winner a couple years back, wrote a song, Sweet Serendipity. Music's a great gateway for me, for my kids.
Right.
One family discussion, which is a vehicle. I said, I got a song today, and you know, we listened to the song once, and then we discussed as a family what a serendipity / synchronicity is. We gave examples in our own life of perhaps when we felt, ooh, this was a synchronicity and what occurred because of it. We listened to the song quietly, meditatively, one more time. You can dance to the song if you want. That's always a favorite, too. And then the family discussion was done. So here we pull a theme of energy connectedness, synchronicity, into an everyday pop song that they love. And we have a 15-minute family discussion. You know, and then when you're,
very
that
cool.
might occur on a Sunday, but then when they get off the bus on a Monday or a Tuesday and they've got something going on in their real world, you've got synchronicity at your fingertips, or you've discussed multiple perspectives. You've got that at your fingertips. Let's look at this friendship issue, and boy, oh boy, 13-year-old girls sure have some of those, but we have the groundwork of multiple perspectives.
Yes.
You know, that's what I'm talking about here. How can we blend it all and integrate it so it's useful as a family? We have a lot of visual cues in our car, in our kitchen. So if we've discussed soul to soul versus role to role, which is one of the themes, then you better believe that with my little laminating machine that I love because I was a fourth grade teacher, has been put laminated and popped up on a kitchen cabinet in bright yellow paper in a little funky cutout blurb. Soul to soul versus role to role, baby! ! And there you go. You know what I mean? So that's what.
Yes.
Yeah, we're a quirky Burnside family, that's for sure.
Oh,
but,
not quirky at all. It's right up there with this household, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But,
so. I'm trying to show people, though, how it can be integrated, these themes. So there are 15 themes in the book, self-love, gratitude, not just because it's the plate thing to say thank you, because we're teaching our children, reminding our children, never really teaching, reminding what they already know, that gratitude is a high vibrational energy that changes your future reality. So, that, you know, you could leave it at one level, or you can take gratitude where I think you and I want to take gratitude, which is the energy of gratitude.
Yes, yes. And you know, the more that they recognize their own appreciation and their own gratitude and their own, you know, connectedness to who they are, it expands. I mean, it's like, you know, they may be grateful for, you know, something that's an obvious gratitude, like, boy, I'm sure glad you picked me up from the bus stop. It was pouring rain. And then it moves into things like, hey, Mom, thanks for taking me to school. Now, that's something that, you know, I'm sorry, but it's an unconditional thing. You know, it's like, okay, they're going to get to school every day, and I am going to be the one who gets them there. But to have your 15-year-old turn to you when you're dropping them off at school and say, hey, Mom, thanks for taking me. Well, knowing full well he wasn't going to miss school, but he still had the compassion at 15 years old to turn and thank me. Those are the moments that are these invisible little awards that I carry with me. And I think, you know, if I'm raising them to be grateful for the most simplistic aspect of life, I'm doing all right, you know?
Yeah. And I would say, too, to people out there, you know, all of these wonderful higher level, quote unquote, emotions that to me are the gateway to spirit, joy, appreciation, gratitude, empowerment, freedom, love, of course, can be felt within the body. So we're really working with our children. If the moment is right, believe me, my 14-year-old and 13-year-old daughters who share room can eye roll like the best of them. So we are far from perfect. But, you know, if they are grateful for something, I always, with a twinkle in my eye, can you feel it? Can you feel the gratitude?
Nice.
Can you feel the joy rising up in and then out? And because I want to kind of train them to pay attention to that subtle, because that's where my deepest glory and nirvana has come, feeling it in my body as consciously spirit and body. So that's really the ultimate goal in our house. And every family has, of course, a different mission, I'm sure. But conscious spirit embodiment, I can say flat out, is why I do what I do with my children, with others. And it's my mission in the world, I think. And I think yours is right up there with that too, Lisa, from knowing you the way that I do. That's why we do what we do.
That's true. That's true. And I'll tell you, there's, you know, to, you know, the fact that you're teaching other people to really use their practicality and their skills that they already have within them. It's inherent. It's within who they are. It's not a matter of going out and investing thousands of dollars into this program or this tool-making kit or whatever. It's here's the tools. That's what I love about your book. Here's the tools. Here's what you can do, and you don't have to spend a dime. You just have to be prepared to do the work. And
go for
you're
it.
Taking
you know,
it
be
to
yourself. Go for it. Yeah.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Yes.
Speak how we're speaking today. Like, more of us are beginning to do that. Like, you know, the conversations I have in the grocery store line, oh, woo-wee. I mean, literally,
exactly
what we're talking about here today, and I love it, and that's how we're going to change the world. I truly feel, not with all these huge war against drugs. It's literally, does your inner match your outer expression, and how can we help people to do that? And bam, we do our part to change the world.
Yes, and it's not, it's in these teaching moments. It's we had a teacher here in our county who was caught and arrested for selling drugs or throwing drugs into another car in a parking lot in a pharmacy parking lot. And so it was an actual undercover cop, and it went into the newspapers, and you know, it was all of this hush-hush talk. And they didn't fire this woman who, in my mind, you know, this could have been a teaching moment for all students in our county that, hey, you know what? She screwed up. She's going to have to pay the price. And this is something that is a teaching moment. No. What they did was they just pushed her off into another job. She couldn't be a teacher anymore, but she had full benefits. She still kept her salary, and she was doing something else. And I thought to myself, okay, what is wrong with society that we can take something like this and not see the effect that the trickle-down effect it has upon the children who know about this event. And
right.
It's like, oh, well, she just got a slap on the hand, you know. It was just
no accountability, which is
no
which is
accountability.
A part of being living truth, right? Yeah, no accountability. Mm.
And it's amazing to me that as a society we're showing this, and there's no conscious connection to why society is the way it is and why children
right.
are living in a primarily entitled mentality, because society doesn't value values and morals. And
right.
you know, there's
right.
this disconnect. And so, you know, it is difficult if the parent isn't aware to kind of take a concept that they haven't really used and utilized in their own life and try and teach a child that, because you have to you only model who you are. And if who you are is deceitful, then you're going to be modeling deceit. So,
yeah, absolutely. That's the first step. The parent becoming clear. Yeah, that's 90% of the world.
Exactly right.
You and I both know. And then if you don't decide to do one step, you know, in the book or in any other book, if you become a clear mirror, and you begin to know who you really are and go down that path of self-exploration, the energy in your home changes. It
yes.
absolutely raises. I would say that, wouldn't you say? I mean, it just
oh,
who
yeah.
you are, who you're emanating. Your children are become a witness to that, and it allows them, because they're already there. They just need permission to be there and to shine that brightly. They're really teaching us in that regard, you know. But they get
yes,
to be a certain
are.
Age, and then they become one of us, you know, filled with psychic debris. I hate to say it, but that is what occurs. And then they're going to spend years
yes.
upon years wading through it before they can offer their true self to the world.
That's true. And some of my most aha enlightening moments have been when my own words come back to me from my children's mouths. So that has been one of those moments where I stand a little bit more erect, and I, you know, look at things and I think, okay, you know what? They were actually listening. That is
yes,
really cool.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, and it's these little wise little beings. I think that children are so underestimated in their wisdom because, you know, so many I see today are little wise old souls, and they're so much wiser than so many 40, 50, 60-year-old adults that I know. So it amazes me on how underestimated a lot of children are, and how many teachers do not look at that whole sense of self and potential, you know, outcome for the individual, rather than teaching by the book or going by the book, you know?
Yeah, our kids, they can handle a lot is being done now. A woman named Therese Rowley in Chicago, who's a beautiful intuitive and creating a documentary, but she does a lot of work with children. And you know what she sees? And this is just my perspective and hers, but a lot of children that come her way that have been diagnosed, labeled, and drugged as ADD or ADHD are actually extremely gifted clairvoyantly, clairaudiently.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking in more of the mural, let's say. They're taking in more of the oneness. And when you're in a first grade classroom and you have a more five sensory teacher and you're
mm-hmm.
gifted sensorily, which all of us are, some really, in particular in some areas, it's hard for the adult world to understand this kid is taking in a lot more. And we
exactly.
need to, you know, celebrate the gifts. And as a society, we tend to label and drug. And I'm not saying I wouldn't do that, you know, if needed. I'm just saying I think we need to look at things from a larger perspective.
Yes,
along with
I think
perhaps
so too.
Doing what needs to be done. So, yeah, I was on a radio show once, and the host said, you know, my daughter at age 4 looked at a plant out in our yard and said, Mom, do you see what I see there? There are all these little vibrating she was seeing the vibrating cells that made up the plant, and she described it exactly what would be seen under a microscope, my friends. I mean, I felt spirit everywhere. I mean, these
yes.
are our children that are coming in, and we don't even see them because we don't see ourselves as that. And that's
right.
our work, Lisa. That's our work here today and every day, you know.
That is so beautifully put, Annie, because it is, you know, there's all this, You know, you hear there's so many catchwords. In fact, I even catch myself when I call you sister because it's so overused. But I love you on such a soul level that I just don't have another word that I can correlate.
I know.
But you hear like the Indigo Children. You hear soulmates. You hear all these little catchphrases that, quite frankly, you know, make me a little nauseated. But it's like it's an overused concept. It's like, okay, you know what? The children being born for the last decade or 12, you know, 15, 20 years are a little bit more aware than we were. Yes, let's just accept that, you know.
Right, exactly. And expect more from them, from ourselves. They're capable.
And
they're ready. They're willing.
You know? Yes. Yeah. And they're open. You know, the thing is I really see the openness, the heartfelt connection, the compassion. But I also see how that's stifled or pushed down, or society's really not, you know, giving credence to that sensory perception, that sensitivity, that, you know, and I've always been a big believer of what you just said about children who are, you know, there are children who do benefit from medication, and I'm not a big advocate for that, but I do recognize that. But I think for the most part, we are an over-medicated country, and we're over-medicated because there's so many adults who are not in touch with themselves and their feelings, that because these children are like picking up on 15 different things at once, they can't handle it. So let's stifle it, you know?
Right.
And that stifling is really detrimental to the soul of the individual, because now they're feeling like, oh, there must be something wrong with me because I shouldn't be feeling this way or thinking this way or doing things this way. So, you know, the self-judgment starts to come in with a lot of
right, and then we got years of learning how to love ourselves, you know. And as you and I both know, I mean, I see the perfection in everything exactly as it is in the evolution of it all. But yet I personally feel a responsibility as I become more aware of my own soul and what it's here to offer, of having the courage to offer it. And I think you're the same way. I mean, it's not like a judgment of what we see in the world is bad. It is what it is, and it's part of the oneness.
Right.
You know, just like the spirit healer is part of the oneness and the neurosurgeon is part of the oneness. And yet we the courage to choose in what feels like truth for us. And I agree with you. I mean, there's a lot more that we could be doing, you know.
Right. And it's one of those things where, you know, we only can do what we know we can do, and we only can do from where we're coming from. So if we are kind of operating in the dark, it's our responsibility as the adult to get out of the dark, to find the light, you know, to turn the light on. And these are the things that then we can start to at least look at ourselves or look at tools and aspects to help our kids. Because the kids are really, you know, they are the future. And where our future goes depends upon how the children are integrated within themselves. And this is up to us. It's up to us and as parents. You know, your children are absolutely beautiful little light beings. And I think mine are pretty cool myself. But as you know, as a parent, not everything goes skippy 100% of the time.
No.
And you're going to have little moods. And you're going to have rebellion. And you're going to have these testing, challenging moments. And that's part of life and parenting. And it's my absolute favorite job. I mean, I wouldn't trade it for the world. But it is, you know, it can be a very difficult job. And so when we're going through these moments with our kids where they're, you know, like you're starting it now, you've got a 14 and 13-year-old, and I've got a 13 and 15-year-old. And so they are at that point where they want to step a little bit away from us to get that independence, and yet they still need to know that they've got the security and the home base that's consistent. And you know, how can we step out of our own stuff so we don't take their stuff personally? You know, can you offer us just a little bit of your wisdom in regard to how we cannot take their moods personally?
Oh gosh, I mean it is a hard one. All I can say though is the more inner work that I have done, and to me inner work is ongoing. I utilize what's going on in my life. I mean, if I break a wrist, then yeah, I'll get it set, but you better believe I'm looking at where I'm not flexible in my own life, and I'm dissecting and excavating. And that is a priority over a Costco run for me. You know, it's where we place our priorities. My well-being and inner work is a top priority, what I would call my spiritual development. I model that for my children. So to answer your question, the more that I have gone down this path of self-exploration, and not just in name, literally I live my life that way, the more I don't have to take anyone's mood personally, you know, because
right.
my greatest love affair is truly with my very own soul and being in alignment
right.
with that. And when I'm in alignment with that, then I can handle pretty much anything from a pretty darn good place. And that's not to say I don't, you know, have my moments and become angry, but less and less frequent. I'm out of the
right.
woods more than I'm in the woods now. And I don't need
yes.
anyone else to make me happy, not even my husband, not my children. It's this deep feeling of inner joy, and I know that might sound cliche or something, but once you've glimpsed it and begin to feel it, it becomes a top priority.
Yeah,
that type
exactly.
of well-being. And then I know my children are okay because in their own right, they are an eternal, infinite being. I guide them, I assist them academically, this, that, but people might all get an uproar about a referendum in the school or this or that and the other. And, you know, I'll vote for it, this, that, but I don't get all my feathers
right,
all ruffled
about
much because in
right.
the end, I love the divine paradox. Everything has deep meaning and nothing matters because when you know yourself as eternal and divine, I know that I cannot be harmed. I know that my children cannot be harmed. They might perceive to be harmed, but I tell you what, even a bullet would not harm my child ultimately because I know that they cannot die. And when you really live that, not much can ruffle you too much. Would you agree with that, Lisa?
Right.
I
would agree
I
with that. And, you know, and it is. It's something that, you know, we hear a lot about, and a lot of times you hear it as simply words. But when you start to put the words into action, that's where the real meat and the real, you know, it meets. And you've got that point of, okay, there's that reckoning. There's that reckoning of understanding, both within ourselves, in walking our talk, and in taking this to the next level of trust and faith. And
I used what I used earlier, kind of the feeling of, it's what someone would call like Buddhist detachment, but to bring it into like everyday language, like instead of like, oh my God, this is happening, because I see myself as a witness, you know, I witness what's occurring and I know that it's
right.
not actually me fully, it's like, God, that's interesting. I'm curious. Like, I'm getting ready to head into neurosurgery. Okay, I had all natural childbirths. I've never had surgery in my life. A week from now, and literally, as all this has unfolded, and I've uncovered some beautiful things. It's all gonna be in my second book. But it's been 8-9 months of very, very debilitated, difficult to walk around the block. I mean, I've never. What's been uncovered? The unfolding, and it's more like, what will neurosurgery be like now? I am serious, you know? I mean, the perspective of struggling and seeing fear in people's eyes, walking that Navy Pier in Chicago over my birthday this summer, it was literally like, oh, my God, is this what it feels like to be debilitated? Is this what it feels like to be perceived? I mean, I was just hobbling. I had to rest. I couldn't stand in lines, and I've still been that way. Is this what people feel like? Wow, it feels very isolated. It feels lonely because you can feel the projection of fear in other people's eyes. I'm just giving that as a perfect personal example. You know, have I had moments
Beautiful.
Of crying to my husband, like, I can't take the pain. It's excruciating. Absolutely. I won't deny
right.
that, yes, but many more moments of what I'm telling you now. Yeah.
Right.
So.
And it's too easy in moments like that for this is also, you know, another epidemic of society is that kind of pain ushers in, you know, the excuse to, you know, and oftentimes you need to take some pain medication, but there's such an addiction to it. And so, you know, that again is another societal push where, okay, we're not going to delve into the esoteric aspects or the whole body aspect and really get into the core of the pain. We're going to just give you these pills.
Right, exactly.
And
we'll do surgery immediately.
We're going to let you escape.
Yeah.
You know,
pain brought many gifts. That's the paradox here. You know, the pain, the gifts, and I had a wonderful mentor say, Annie, you know, you could perhaps get this fixed immediately, and, you know, and I don't operate that way. I like to let things unfold and do a lot of inner work along with it. That can take, you know, courage because it can be hard. But
oh, yeah.
So worthwhile, Lisa, as you know. I mean, I just it's and both. Again, there's no right timing for anyone to get a surgery or not, or take a drug or not, or do what even, you know, whatever occurs. It's a feeling of trust, of letting things kind of open up for you too. Most
That's
of us
right.
miss a lot of the gifts because we're too fast to just keep it on a physical level. And it's both physical and metaphorically energetic, you know. So I would say that's, and my kids have witnessed all of this too, the many angles of working on it. And that's, it's been very interesting for them, I think. They'll never forget it, nor will I, you know, as your kids
right.
will never forget that death experience that they had when they were so little. And, you know, so.
And it does. It definitely it comes back into that piece of, okay, how do they assimilate all the emotions? How do they assimilate who they are? And that's where, you know, it is our job as parents and guardians and role models that if there's a child in your life, you know, look at them as the wise soul that they are, not as this, you know, being that needs to be controlled or this being
fixed.
That needs to
yeah.
be fixed or that, you know, has your projections thrown at them, because this is an individual, and even though they come from us, they may be our flesh and blood, they're still unique among themselves, and they have a different way. They may learn a lot of patterning from us. They may learn a lot of how to handle things positively or negatively, but they still have their own compass, and that's unique among any other compass on the world. So, you know, there's this wisdom, there's this innate wisdom. Honor the child. Honor the wisdom of the child. And I want to, we have about 4 minutes left. Can you believe it? This has just been the most, I love this show with you. I want to make sure everyone knows how to get in touch with you. So I have you on the chat room here. I have your website, which is www.soultosoulparenting.com. Annie Burnside, Soul to Soul Parenting is her book, and she's writing a second book. Yay, more visits to my show.
Yes, woo.
What would you like to share with our audience in the last few minutes here, Annie?
Oh, gosh, Lisa. I mean, first of all, what a joy and a pleasure, the opportunity that you give someone like me to share our perspective and experience, and that's all it is. I would never say that I'm an expert. I just like you to share.
Best.
Well, thank you, but perspective and experience. But, you know, if you listen to Lisa's show regularly, I probably don't have to say that, but if anything resonates that you heard here today, I mean, no fear. There is everything to gain and nothing to lose by getting to
yeah.
know yourself better and offering your truth to the world, period. I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. And authenticity is overused, perhaps, but it's not even about being religious. It's not about being spiritual, even though I love that word. It's not about that. It's about being authentic and coming to
yeah.
know the voice of your own soul. So if you're a physical therapist, be soul to soul there. If you work at McDonald's, be soul to soul there. If you're a CEO, be a clear mirror for the world.
Yes.
You know, if you're
yes.
a teacher, be a clear mirror for your students, and by all means, if you're a parent, become a clear mirror for your children. It's the greatest gift you could ever give them.
Amen. I mean, it's, you know, and it's not, it's hard when we try to avoid these things. It's difficult when we try to mask it. It's much easier, even when it's sticky, even when it's a little icky and painful, to really embrace it, the reality of what you're going through in the moment, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's light.
Yeah,
and
raw truth is nothing to be feared. It will set you free.
Yes.
I've learned that
it,
the hard
it,
way, but it's true, yeah.
It's true because you've got this aspect of life that's where, you know, many people are pushing up against, and you can't really push up against circumstances that hit you, you know, sometimes with a 2x4 upside the head that you really, you know, do you really want to avoid that? I mean, it's here to address. It's here to deal with. So,
yeah.
you know, your book is such an incredible guide, Soul to Soul Parenting. Everybody who has a child, who interacts with a child, who is a role model for a child, I urge all of you to go out and buy Soul to Soul Parenting. It's one of the best books I've ever read, and it's a guide. It becomes like, you know, there's a few authors I've had on here, and you're one of them, and it's like one of those little Bible books that you keep. You know, it's like, oh, what would Annie do?
Oh, thank you.
It's like okay, so you know, it's the wisdom, it's the practicality, it's the insight, it's the compassion. And it's basically just being really dropping into your heart and not trying to be something you're not, and really, and your kids know when you're pretending. I mean, there's not a better compass than children. But wait, I'm being told I have 5 seconds. So Annie Burnside, Soul to Soul Parenting, God bless you. Thank you so much for being on Unlimited Realities. Everybody, thank you for joining us. I look forward to showing you a new show next week. God bless you. Have a wonderful week. Thank you, Annie.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.